Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
From the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field, Jaguars Thursday. Right after the final Gus Bradley radio show of the season. He's out of here. So this will be the final 7 to 8 o'clock Jaguars Thursday. We'll move to 6 to 7 next week for the remainder of the offseason. J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli as we continue. And there's a nice photo of Tony Baselli on the wall. Wow. Of course you would notice yourself, Tony. Yes, how it works.
Really, that's what you're going to do.
I think somebody had on the trash heap and we saved it.
Yeah, I think it was going out into trash.
There's a big, what, three feet by 2 foot photo behind us?
I'll take it home. If they want to throw it away, I'll take it home. Just so Angie can look at it.
Good looking picture.
Goodness. Phone lines open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Plenty to talk about tonight. Coordinator search. Some new names have popped up through reports and such. Greg Jones retired as a member of the Jaguars today.
One of the all-time greats.
We'll talk about all that coming up. Let's start with the coordinator search.
Hold on, before we go to that, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm going to just
You just did. But go ahead.
Let me ask you another question. I'm going to ask Logs this because he'll know.
What does that mean?
You won't know.
What does that mean?
Because you won't know. You haven't been here since the beginning.
You're right.
So every guy who ever played here,
mm-hmm.
all in a room, and it's a free-for-all fight. Greg Jones is one of the last coming out.
Hey, no doubt. There is absolutely
I'm trying to think who I'd pick ahead of Greg Jones.
Yeah, I don't know if I would pick anybody ahead of Greg Jones. Whoa, wait a minute. Chris Naoli.
Yeah.
Chris Naoli, the only one I was going to take. If it's a cage match, right?
Cage match.
Steel cage death match.
I'm taking Naoli, probably taking Manawai.
I got one over you.
Greg Jones.
I'm taking
Big John? No?
I'm taking Leon Searcy because if he hits you, you're done.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. He had more
knock you out.
Short area power.
That's what I'm taking.
Than any NFL player that I ever played against, whether it been in practice or regular season game, it was second to none. When I mean short area power, I'm talking about the ability. You know how when you would go to the circus or the carnival, and you hit the sledgehammer to ring the bell, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Leon had such a great punch, he could stand over top of the spot that you had to hit, forget the hammer, okay, or the mallet, whatever it was, he could take his palm and literally just stiff arm it real quick, like he extended out when he would block, pass block, and he would make that bell ring.
Yeah. Mm. You know those, like, movies where the karate, they'd, you know, rip the guy's heart out, like, those he actually could do that.
You saw him do it one time.
He almost took Jeff's heart. Took it out.
That was the first year that Leon came here, and I remember
almost killed him.
I was going to do a like a chop swim on Leon Searcy,
and you missed.
The problem was I missed the chop part before the swim.
Okay,
and so when I missed the chop part, he literally hit me in my chest and touched my spine. Okay, and this is God's honest truth. I landed on my shoulder blades. That was the first thing to hit the ground was my shoulder blades. And everybody's laughing, and I'm going,
I thought it was funny.
Oh, my God.
I bet you did.
I enjoyed
it. I've never been hit like that in a practice ever in my life.
But I bring it up because Greg Jones, one of the great characters, one of the great players, one of the great guys who ever played for the Jaguars.
No
doubt. Also one of the toughest individuals to ever walk through these doors.
That Greg Jones used to have on the field battles with? And Joe, help me with this, because you remember when Greg Jones used to get, it was with one of the linebackers, and Greg, he picked him up and body slammed him in a game.
Yes.
And it was you know, one of these feared linebackers in the National Football League, and Greg picked him up and threw him around like he was the crash test dummy. And I was going, did Greg just toss around this guy like he was nothing? Oh, my God, he did. That was Greg Jones now. Tough.
And what people don't realize, I mean, they probably don't remember, Greg Jones, one year, I can't remember what year, Jeff, you'll remember the year, had to play tailback and rush for 100 yards.
I think it was 05.
He had at least 100-yard game, I know that.
Right around 05.
Oh, he was a great player.
That was the one year he had the most carries in his career.
Yeah, great player.
Greg Jones, sorry to interrupt you, earlier today talking about the decision to retire and what football meant to him as a player coming up.
Football is a great game, and there's no argument about that. But at the same time, it's a relationship. You must nurture it, spend time with it, by lifting weights, running, and studying plays. If you do all these things, football will love you back, and the feeling will be unexplainable. It's a game that cannot be cheated. I will always love this game, and it will always be a part of me.
There's Greg Jones earlier today in his retirement speech.
I think
good stuff.
By the way, you'd asked about his 100-yard game. His rookie year, 04, and obviously I don't know which game it was. We could probably find out if we had the Jaguars history book. But in 05 is when he had the most carries in a single season in his career, when he had 151 for 575
yards. There's a bunch of injuries, and he had to go from fullback to tailback and did a great job.
Well, and they were still kind of in the first couple of years, still trying to figure out, you know, was he going to be just a fullback or was he going to be a hybrid, kind of like a Mike Allstott? And that's kind of what they had envisioned, I think, when they had drafted him.
That Which was he could have been.
He could have been. And that was James Harris, James Shaq Harris, his draft class, one of his few draft classes. And that was one of his best drafts, was when Greg Jones was in there. I'm trying to think of who the first-round pick was in 04. But Greg was the second-round pick.
Sure. It was Reggie Williams.
Was it Reggie?
Bing
Bing?
Sure.
Oh, boy.
Because John was
well, the first year was Byron his 03.
Byron was 03. John was 02. And I believe Reggie Williams was 04.
That's right, because they were going to get a wide receiver.
So maybe it wasn't a great draft.
No, that was not. Well, Greg was Greg made it good. Greg made it good.
All right, sorry to hijack
No, but it tells you a lot about his personality that he would take and change roles to be a lead back.
He's a football player.
Yeah.
Greg Jones, 100 yards against Baltimore in 2005. Here's the call.
First and 10, Jaguars at their own 46 after the Cousin interception. Here's the handoff to Jones trying to get outside, and he does. He's at the 50, puts his head out, look at him charge. He's still on the run. Inside the 40 and down to the 37-yard line. He's going to go over 100. They're going to put him down at the 40.
Oh, what a night.
How about that, huh?
You know, I also – the other thing I remember about Greg was that when he came at Florida State, he had the ACL.
Yep.
And then he had another ACL here as a Jaguar player. And then when he came back, it was pretty much exclusively a fullback. But, I mean, when he came back from rehabbing that ACL, he was full go.
Didn't he hurt the ACL early in the year?
It was early one year, and then he came back the next year. But, I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy who had multiple ACL tears. And, in fact, this weekend I was watching the playoff football games and was watching the linebacker for the Carolina Panthers.
Thomas Davis, three ACLs.
Multiple ACLs. When I was sitting there looking at Thomas Davis, and they were talking about all the ACLs that he had, and I remember that he had them, and it made me think of Greg Jones, you know, because Greg had multiple ACLs. I mean, for guys to come back, I mean, I had one ACL, you had an ACL, but for guys to go through that twice, boy, I mean, you know, give them a lot of credit for the courage and the hard work that they have to go through, because that's not an easy process.
There was a lot of talk today. I had a chance yesterday to talk to a few of the former players on the phone for a piece that's on Jaguars.com right now, just remembering Greg Jones and the teammate. And almost to a man, they talked about the scraps that they remember on the field. Guys would try to come at Greg Jones.
It never worked out.
And the one I remember was my first year in 2012, preseason game, the Giants, Umanura. And him got into it.
Yes.
And there's a photo of him bending the face mask off Umanura's helmet with it on his head. Like, the face mask is away from the helmet.
I'm just telling
it's hard
you,
to do.
Cage match all-time Jaguars of everyone in the room. I'm not sure he wins.
He'd be number one overall, maybe.
He's there at the end. Unless he was on the opposite team as I would, I'd strategize, get about five guys to go out him, try to get him out early.
You also remember about that the 2012 season with Greg. I remember after the first preseason game, you know, every week do Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. I literally did an entire Friday segment called Mean Greg Jones. And it was a game in which he absolutely stole the heart out of whoever that was in opening day in 2012, to where the linebacker by the end of that game was flat out turning it down. And I'm talking turning it down. Embarrassing that he was turning it down because Greg had just whooped him.
Kind of like Sam Gash used to
do
to
people. The entire game, yes. I mean, it was, and I'm talking not just being satisfied with the block, you know, of once the block was executed, was pushing his face into the dirt, and then coming back again and looking for that guy, and that guy was just literally almost to the point where he was running to the other side of the field to try to get blamed. I misread it to not hit Greg Jones. That's how good he was.
So it's great to have him retire as a Jaguar. It's what it should have been. Wish he would have been able to finish his career, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, left for a year, and he said his kids, even when the Jaguars played the Texans that one year, his kids were wearing Jaguars jerseys at the game. They were always Jags fans, and they were always going to be Jags fans.
Good stuff, man. I'm glad he was able to do that, and what a great career, 10 years as a fullback in the National Football League. And Greg was an elite-level fullback while he played.
You know, you and Gus talked about this a little earlier, but the fullback position has changed certainly over the last few years.
In some cases,
of it,
what fullback position?
Yeah, some have just eliminated it altogether. So, I guess who are some premier fullbacks right now? Kuhn in Green Bay, I guess.
Well, I mean, Kuhn is just because the Green Bay following, and you know, every time he touches the ball in Green Bay, they're all going.
I don't even know if he's that good.
And I don't think he's not near the level of a blocker as far as fullbacks goes as the guy right here. And Will Tofoe. And I think Will Tofoe is one of the best blocking fullbacks in the league right now.
Well, the reality is what most teams are doing is they don't really have a fullback. They're using their third tight end when they want to get into some form of I formation as the lead block. And he's a move guy, and he's, you know, the old kind of old H-back. And that's what the tight end has become, because you have to be able to – you have to be able to go out and routes. I mean, you got to be able to spread people out. You got to be able to do a lot of things. So they just move that guy in as the fullback a lot.
And most of those guys that do that, the tight ends / H-backs, they don't have that.
They're getting in the way.
They don't have that nasty attitude. They're the old.
Get in the way block.
Yeah, get in the way. Let me slow you down just enough. You know,
they don't rub your face in
Plus, with a lot of the zone schemes, a lot of teams are running out. It's a lot of single back stuff. So. It's just a different game.
Certainly is. So Greg Jones, the 10-year fullback, 9 with the Jaguars, signed a one-day contract. And that's a little-known rule, too. You have to have a roster space to do this. So he has to actually sign a contract. You did this, right?
Yeah.
You signed a one-day deal. So you have to sign a contract, and then they send that on to the league that you're a retired player. So
pretty cool.
It's not open all the time to be done.
No, and that's good, you know, because, you know, hey, look, I know the fullback is not a sexy position in football anymore.
Yeah, but he's our fullback.
But Greg Jones, I mean, if you wanted to talk about the elite fullbacks, and I'm talking elite fullback, he was one of the elite fullbacks for about a decade. Now, I'm not saying he was elite all 10 years, but for about a 5 or 6 year stretch, Greg might have been arguably one of the top two fullbacks in the NFL. And that's saying something now.
Yeah.
And the guy that was making it ahead of him, was it Sam Gash?
Well, Sam Gash, Lorenzo Neal.
Lorenzo
those
Neal.
Guys kind of backed up. And then at the end, I don't know who was after them.
I can't remember exactly. But
both great players.
One of those. I mean, you know, they were all good players. But there was a couple years that, I mean, the only thing that held Greg back from being the Pro Bowl fullback was that he played in Jacksonville, smaller market, and there was not a lot of wins associated with the football team. But if you were to ask a lot of the personnel guys at that time, the ones who, you know, responsible for writing checks, a lot of them would take Greg Jones over the other guys in the National Football League. He was that good.
Plenty to get to tonight on Jaguars Thursday. We'll come back and talk offensive coordinator search, Senior Bowl. Preparations are underway for next week's event in Mobile. Your calls as well, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
We continue from the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. Jaguars Thursday, J.P. Shadrick, Tony Buscelli, who has a photo on the wall now in here.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thank you, Joe. I know you did that.
And Jeff Loggeman. Where's yours is number one, too. The old ad is there. Yeah, that's right.
I got a photo. It's
quarterbacks taste just like chicken, apparently.
Yep. The old back of the South End Zone scoreboard back in the glory day.
Yeah.
We didn't make very much fun of them for that being up there either.
No, you didn't?
No, not at all.
They're just jealous. That was pretty cool because they're like, all right, give us a mean look. And I was like, are you serious? can you give us a mean look? And it was almost like a smirk.
Yeah, it's a little awkward, actually, looking at it now.
The problem is if you have that poster up and you start slow getting sacks, everyone's going to – you're going to hear about it.
Absolutely. I heard about it.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't have an offense. We didn't score any points. That first year, 95?
No pass rush opportunity.
What did you guys end up with, 17 sacks that year?
Yeah, what do we – let's see, we didn't score any points in the first game.
Yeah, we did three.
Oh, it was three?
10-3.
Didn't get shut out.
Let's put it this way. When we won the first game, it was only because – I think it was – we had screens and
– the one in Houston?
Yeah. We barely. You guys held them to barely any points there too.
Well, when we do it, the way that we
what
won
was
that
the final.
I don't remember what the final score was, but I remember at the end of that game in the fourth quarter, I was lined up against Bruce Matthews, one of the all time greats.
Sack fumble, right?
And not a sack fumble, it was a run, and I actually got reached by Bruce Matthews. I didn't end up having my outside arm free, but I had taken him back far enough up the field, made the running back cut back, and then caused a fumble.
17-16 against the Oilers.
Yeah, so we only scored 17.
17 points there in Houston. Mm. And
our next win, the only reason we won is because we scored a touchdown and then a pick six. It was 14-0. We held on for dear life.
Yeah.
Wow. Wasn't a lot of points that year.
I'm looking at the year now. Yeah,
no, so but then that obviously all changed, and the sack total went up a little bit, but not proportionate to the amount of points.
Did you get to keep the billboard the next year?
I don't remember.
I don't either. No.
I don't remember. I think it was up for maybe a year, maybe two. I don't know.
Speaking of scoring points on offense, the Jaguars are
nice
still
transition.
Searching for
good
an
work,
offensive
JP.
Coordinator. Hey, thank you, Tony.
That would be called a segue.
That would be a segue. And there have been a few another wave of names that have popped up around the job now. Doug Marrone reported to be in the building yesterday. Greg Olsen, former Jags quarterback coach, offensive coordinator with the Raiders, reported to be in the building today. So fresh names now this week as opposed to last week. That's just how this works, though, right?
Well, and I don't know how many names, you know, from talking to Gus on the Gus show, he said, you know, 5-6 guys that he's had a chance to talk with in person, I think is what he said, and talked to, you know, some others maybe on the phone. But, who knows where this is going to go, you know, when these head coaching positions start to kind of get going a little bit, then I think that will pretty much take care of itself as far as time frame goes. Mm-hmm. But when you've got, you know, Doug Marrone or other coordinators or coordinator candidates that are also candidates elsewhere because of openings, and then also maybe candidates as head coaching jobs in some of the open positions, obviously some of them are starting to get filled up.
I think there's only three open, Denver, Atlanta, and Chicago. And I bet you I can call who the head coaches are right now at those three places.
Well, call them.
Yeah. John Fox at Chicago, Dan Quinn in Atlanta, and Gary Kubiak in Denver.
You think Gary's going to take that
really?
Job?
Really?
Yes.
I don't think he's going to take it.
You think he's going to turn down a job to go back where he played his entire career and make three times what he's making right now as an offensive coordinator?
Well, I don't know what he's making now because I don't know what his contract was with the Texans.
I understand
that. I don't
know
if that comes into play.
There's only 32 head coaching jobs.
You're right.
And he played his whole career there.
Buddies with John. I get all that, but here's the thing. Of all the positions that were open, is that not the least attractive one?
Well, it's the most attractive from a personnel standpoint. It's the least attractive because it's Super Bowl or you might get fired.
That's,
right?
I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
Do you know the personnel? Peyton
and that's the other thing. You may not have Peyton.
Peyton's
Manning.
Coming back. He ain't going out
stuck
like that.
Stuck with Osweiler or whatever his name
He's
is.
He's not going out like that. Injured and worst game arguably of his career. I just don't see that happening.
I don't either, but it's still up in the air.
If I was betting, if I was a gambler and there was somewhere you could bet on who head coaches are, that's who the next – those are the three head coaches. I think the reason Atlanta is waiting so long is because they want Dan Quinn. That's all the reports.
Terrell Austin supposedly still a candidate there in Atlanta. But I agree with you. I mean, because Atlanta has, you know, if you look at all the jobs, Atlanta might be one of the most attractive ones, you know, because they have Matt Ryan.
They are so bad on defense.
Julio Jones. And if you're the Atlanta Falcons, I mean, what more can you, if you're a head coach going into a situation to have a veteran quarterback, you know, wide receivers that are really good. Your personnel needs an upgrade on the defensive side of the ball, clearly, and you need some help at the running back position on offense and some offensive linemen, but that's a pretty good job.
But let me ask you this, Jeff, all what you said is true. If you're the Atlanta Falcons, though, and you're Arthur Blank and Thomas Dimitroff, you fired Mike Smith. Why are you going to go hire Dan Quinn, another defensive-minded guy? I mean, Mike Smith is you love him.
Love him.
And is a very smart defensive mind. All the reports is when he got fired, every player loved him. Matt Ryan didn't want Dirk Cutter to go anywhere because he loved him. I mean, and so now if you're going to fire that guy, the defense, then go hire someone different. Aren't you hiring the same guy? I mean, no disrespect to Dan
Quinn. Perception you're talking.
Yeah, I mean, aren't you hiring the same guy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, I mean, it's.
I mean, I don't know Dan Quinn.
The perception may be the same guy.
But, I mean, same mindset, defensive side of the ball.
Defensive-minded guy. But, you know, also the weakest side of the football for the Atlanta Falcons is the defense.
But that's in my opinion, that's personnel-driven. And
I've been saying
for 3 years, and I put that on the GM, and I like Thomas Dimitroff, but they have done nothing to address that.
Well, they've tried.
Well, they've missed.
It hasn't worked. They've tried and it hasn't worked. Now, the least attractive job
is Chicago.
Denver, I mean, if we're talking about the expectations being high, but it's a great organization,
you're
great
stuck
fan
with Jay
base.
Cutler.
Chicago, you think?
Yes.
Or Oakland?
Didn't Del Rio get that job? It's
close. When they were all open.
I'd rather Oakland than Chicago, I think.
Look at
young team.
Carr's a quarterback.
Yeah, young team. I mean.
Right.
Well, the reason I say that is, I mean, Oakland, there's a lot of.
Plus, you're going to be in L.A. in a couple of years.
Where are you going to be? Well, maybe the Rams. But, I mean, you know, where's the franchise at?
You know what the funny thing is? The same two teams that left a little over 20 years ago are going to come right back.
They might.
That's so stupid.
It really is. That's the challenge, though, for Gus Bradley. I mean, because, like you said, the head
coaching
jobs are open.
Dan Quinn.
The dominoes fall from the head coaching jobs. And then coordinators from other places go there. But as you guys mentioned on the Gus Bradley show earlier, that unless it's a head coaching interview, teams can block other assistant coaches from any coordinator position.
Well, I guarantee you – I don't guarantee you because I don't know it. I'm very sure that – because it happens every year. I'm sure Gus has picked up the phone and called whoever, I don't know who, and said, I'd like to talk to so-and-so, and the team said, no.
Right.
You're not going to talk to that person. And so it limits your scope. You have to limit your scope to who you really can go get.
Right.
Because there's certain teams, even if you want that guy, and even if that guy wants to come here, they say, nope, no can do.
And Gus said it on his side, too. It, from a head coach's point of view, you have to protect the organization sometimes, right?
Sure.
And protect what you've built. That's why your coaching staff.
Joking around with him about, you know, when he was able to bring Todd Walsh, and then Mark Duffner, and was joking around with him, so you consider it even now to where you don't have to grant anybody permission to go anywhere else. You know, and I get that. I get that, but still at the same time, you know, if you're a positional coach and you've got an opportunity to advance your career and then take a role as an offensive coordinator for another team. If I'm a head coach and I've got a guy that I've you know prohibited from talking to another team,
it happens.
I know it happens. But here's the thing, you know, what does that do to the relationship between the organization, the head coach, and that assistant coach who was not given the opportunity to move on as an offensive coordinator somewhere else? You know, I mean, some of these guys, I mean, that's the dream of their lifetime.
Yeah. Well, get another chance.
Well, that's a lot of times what will happen if you're one of those guys who's a sought after, you know, known as a very good position coach and they want to keep you and they sign you to a contract and they want to lock you up. they'll go talk to the GM, the position coach, and the head coach says, listen, I'm only going to sign this if you tell me that if I get called on, you're going to release me to go. I mean, they have those conversations before the fact. Now, they can still go back on it, but a lot of the top assistants, they want to know. So, listen, if I mean, am I going to have the ability to move up if those calls are made?
The one thing that I was wondering, and maybe you guys can help me out, Del Rio's hired in Oakland. Mm-hmm. I read a report that Mike Smith was going to go to Oakland with him. Have you guys seen anything more on that?
I have not.
No.
Okay.
I have not.
On another news item here, just wanted to throw this out here before we take a break. Mm-hmm. Adam Schefter is supposedly reporting that Jaguars former general manager Gene Smith may end up being joining the New York Jets organization. And I'm happy for Gene.
As a pro personnel guy?
Yeah, whatever it may be.
Not the top guy, but.
Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, Gene Smith and in some capacity, and I know a lot of people down on Gene Smith, but Gene Smith is a very hardworking man, and I'm glad to see him, and I hope he does get back in the business because it's what he loves. It's what he is. It's who he is. And he deserves to be back in the game in some capacity. If I were a general manager, I would absolutely love to have Gene Smith on my personnel team, whether it be on the pro side or the college side, because I would know that in my heart that I've got a guy, one, I can trust, and number two, is going to give me every ounce of effort that he has to give. And I hope he gets back in.
Good point. And we didn't mention much about Jack Del Rio. What do you guys think of that hiring? I mean, and did you think you would get another chance, first off?
Well, I mean, look, I think Jack has some head coaching qualities. He also has a little bit of arrogance about him, and I think it hurts him in a lot of areas. But I think that he can be a good head coach. I think at times he has a great ability to motivate a football team. Am I a huge fan of Jack Del Rio? No. Am I happy to see him get another opportunity? Yes, I am happy to see him get another opportunity. And if there was ever a place for maybe for that arrogance to be a little bit at home, and I'm not saying the arrogance is necessarily a bad thing, but if there was ever a place to maybe that is a good fit, it's with the Oakland Raiders. Maybe, you know, because, I mean, that's the organization that for many years now, I'm not saying that they were an arrogant organization, but they had a little bit of a aura about him, that aura has been long gone for the Oakland Raiders for many years.
And maybe he can swagger help, about
and maybe it. He yeah. can help bring that back.
Right. What do you think, Tony?
I'm happy for him. I'm glad. I'm happy that he got another chance. You know, he did, like Jeff said, he did some good things here. I hope. I'll leave it at this. I hope he learned from the mistakes he made here.
Yeah, because the one mistake,
and I hope he can take his strengths that he was outstanding at doing here, and Jeff listed them. And the weaknesses and some of the things that he, you know, I hope he learned from him. And if he can do that, I think he'll do a good job.
Yeah, the one thing that I would say really disappointed me when he was here was the whole Mike Peterson situation. And Mike Peterson, I mean, you want to talk about a guy that you know, that can take your message into the locker room and be your ally from the player's side. Mike Peterson was the ultimate. Great guy, comes to work, plays hard, would run through a brick wall for his teammates. And that relationship soured because of some decisions that Jack made. And it's a shame because Mike Peterson was in the right in that whole thing that kind of went on. Mike Peterson, to me, is one of the most upstanding guys, great football players, and that situation with Jack wasn't great.
Actually met Mike Peterson at the Senior Bowl last year. When we come back,
great guy.
We'll talk about the Senior Bowl next week in Mobile. That's another segue, guys.
Well, that's a tease.
That's two in a row.
That's called a tease.
That's two in a row. We'll tease the Senior Bowl. Talk about that coming up. Jaguars will coach there for the second straight season. New system, new routes, new way. The JTA is transformed to be the kind of bus system customers enjoy riding. Their new routes mark the beginning of a new way of doing business at the JTA. For more information, visit jtafla.com or call 904-630-3100. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
All you Jags 365 season ticket members, your personalized 2015 season ticket renewal brochure is in your email. The deadline to renew is tomorrow, January 16th. Renew now. Enter to win amazing prizes, such as a Shad Khan suite experience, appearances from Jacksonville and the Roar, or even Super Bowl tickets.
Is that kind of got two meanings there, a Shad Khan suite experience, S-U-I-T-E and S-W-E-E-T.
I'm sure both would apply, yes.
Okay.
I wonder if I get in that drawing. I'm a 365 member.
Right. Yeah, you probably could if you renew now, before tomorrow.
I already renewed.
Okay, well then you're in the drawing then, probably. I'm guessing.
My guess is if my name's getting pulled, they're putting it back in.
You might have to. It might be a Tony Baselli appearance. And you're going to win your own appearance, is what it means. You don't even know. You get to go see yourself, Tony.
I do that on a daily basis.
That's right. You're going to win that. That's what's going to happen. So, questions about your account, 633-2000, select option one, or visit jaguars.com. Jaguars Thursday rolls along. Of course, the Jags coaching staff headed to Mobile, Alabama, for the second straight year to coach the South team in the Senior Bowl. The Titans have the North squad this year. It's a good thing, obviously, but you don't want to make – I don't know if you want it 3 years in a row, so this better be the last year, right?
No, you don't.
Yeah.
It's the last year you ever want to do it.
Right. But they'll take advantage of the opportunity.
Absolutely.
And get over there on Monday evening, get in with the team, and as they did last year, just start picking brains left and right. That's what you do all week long, right?
Well, look what they found last year, Aaron Colvin. Brandon Linder. I mean, those two guys right there, maybe two best rookies you found all year.
Yep.
And the play, as far as the way they played, Telvin Smith is right there. Was Telvin there as well
yes,
last
he
year?
He was.
And Telvin?
Yep.
Telvin was there.
He's another guy.
Chris Smith, right?
Chris Smith is another guy.
Don't forget, Lawson was a free agent guy that went to the Senior Bowl.
And so too. I think it's very valuable. It's hands-on. You get to dig in there and find out what the guys are all about, and you make the most of it. And that's what they did last year, and I fully expect that's what's going to happen this year again.
Jeff, you told me you'd never been to the Senior Bowl, right? You played in the Blue-Gray game.
I played in the Blue-Gray game, and then I played in the East-West Shrine game.
Shrine game. Did you play in any of these, Tony?
I did not play in any.
None of those.
I don't even know if the East-West Shrine game is still around.
I believe it is.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
There's a couple of other ones now, too. They're popping up all
NFL
over the place.
PA Bowl.
Right. There was one this weekend somewhere.
I got the letters and got invited to the various bowls, and back then the Hula Bowl.
That's right. That was still going on.
And I was going to go to that just because I wanted to go to Hawaii. And I walked into the head coach's office, John Robinson, and I said, which one of these should I go to? And he looked at me, he says, none. And I go, what do you mean none? I got invited. He's like, you're going to be a top five pick. Why are you going to go? I said, I don't know. He says, don't go. I said, okay. I mean, it was pretty easy. I mean, head coach said, don't go. I'm not going to go.
Yeah, and I was my position obviously a little bit different. I mean, I didn't know where I was going to get drafted. I remember I had a great time. The best one that I went to was not the Blue-Gray game. That was a Christmas Day game. And
you don't like Montgomery on Christmas Day?
Well, reasons why, I mean, we were in full pads every day. And the practices were very demanding, which was fine. I mean, you know, that's football. But then the night before the game, I remember I got the flu or food poisoning
right.
or something.
You told the story last week.
Yeah, I was throwing
this.
Up the whole time. The East-West Shrine game was fantastic. I mean, Palo Alto, a beautiful place, California. And I guarantee you that they don't do this anymore. But at that time, there was 66 dealership vehicles that they allowed the players to have.
That's probably not the smartest move they made.
So me and about three, four other guys, we were able to grab the keys to a van, which we had for the week.
That's not a great idea either.
And we had a great time in Palo Alto at all the different places of, you know.
You went to see museums. And
oh, yeah. Absolutely. Sightseeing.
Libraries.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of higher learning in
I remember Palo Alto. The funniest story that we had, Eric Lindstrom, linebacker from Boston College. And so we were out, you know, sightseeing the night before. And we get back, and it was, you know, we were only going to get, you know, because we practiced in the morning. So we were only going to get a couple hours sleep. Where our routine was, you know, to get a little bit of sleep, practice, then come back, eat, take a nap. You know, that way you'd be well rested for the sightseeing event for the next night. Well, Eric Lindstrom fell asleep in the van, and we were unable to wake him upon our return to the hotel.
Too hard of sightseeing.
Yeah, he just got wore himself out. Yeah.
Walked too much.
So we just let him stay in the van. And then we tied his shoelaces together.
That's not right.
And the next morning, we went out, you know, on the way to the buses to practice. We start banging on the van. Say, Eric, get up. Come on, man. We got to go to practice. He wakes up in the van, in the parking lot, panicking, and throws the door open, thinking that he's going to miss the bus, and goes to jump out with shoelaces tied.
Down hard
on the pavement. That was pretty funny.
That'll make you chuckle.
Oh, we had a good time. And Jimmy Johnson
was... See, we missed that on Tony in all these games. Yeah, I mean, you missed out on this.
We had Jimmy Johnson as one of the coaches. He was not the head coach because Mike Godfrey was the head coach. And that was actually before Jimmy was hired by the Dallas Cowboys. That was, you know, with a matter of weeks before. And but it's a great experience playing for Jimmy. And I understood why he was so successful because, you know, of all the coaches that I remember at the East-West Shrine game, he was the one that really stood out to me just because of the way that he related to the players, the way that he taught, the way that he interacted. I had more fun playing with Jimmy Johnson that week at the East-West Shrine game, I think, than any other time. Now, Mark Stepnoski, who was their draft pick that following spring, was soon to tell me, because Mark was also at the East-West Shrine game as part of our van tour guide bus. And Mark told me later on that he said, you know, remember how much fun Jimmy was to play for at the East-West Shrine game? And I said, yeah. And he goes, he ain't so much fun anymore, I can tell you that.
For coaching, it's funny you mentioned Jimmy Johnson. Remember last year, Gus Bradley and the staff were there, and by the end of the week, the team was so into it. Remember, they won the game, and they doused Gus with Gatorade.
Yeah, that's cool stuff.
Chris Smith was part of that, too. And Chris says the story that, you know, we didn't get to dump water on anybody in Arkansas. We had to do it. It was a great week. So we had to do it while we had the chance. They finally won a ball game. They didn't go to a bowl or anything.
Well,
so.
And if there's any head coach, I mean, first off, I mean, the Jaguars are going to get a great benefit out of being able to do that. You know, and I was saying, you know, a few weeks back, you know, I wish that they could just get a break, which I still wish they could get a break. I mean, just to catch their breath from a long season. But, I mean, they're going to get great benefit out of it. And there's not a better coach to go and coach an all-star game to give those players an experience much like what I had with Jimmy Johnson, to where, you know, making it fun and not making it about, you know, being a pressured interview and making it a game the way it should be. And, you know, watching some of the highlights, you know, on Jaguars.com last year, which Jaguars.com is going to have the same type of coverage this year.
Probably more, actually.
And more. The coverage that they provided last year at the Senior Bowl was fantastic. And I see why so many of those players came away from that week with a deep admiration for Gus Bradley with the way that he ran that ship for the week.
Everything's so scrutinized now. All the practices are televised on NFL Network. And the first practice, I remember explicitly last year, at Fairhope, they go across the bay to Fairhope High School. Nice facility, nice field, where the South team practices there, North team's on the other side at the stadium. But the entire field is surrounded about four or five deep with personnel folks, scouts, agents, whoever it is.
It's like a big job
there,
too.
Yeah, the stands are packed and like that. Yeah, at night. At different establishments, guys are in the lobby trying to get jobs, and it's a whole week of that.
Yeah, especially Tuesday and Wednesday. Those are the big days, and Thursday it slows down a little bit, and then nobody's there Friday except for the guys who are coaching and playing. And the game's probably the least attended part of the week as far as personnel staff. They're there to watch practice and try to get a feel for what's going on and evaluating the guys. And then also guys looking for jobs and networking and making sure the relationship stay strong. So it's a good week.
Yeah, you know, most of the personnel guys don't stick around because, you know, it's hard to watch a football game live and to really kind of judge talent and performance. It's much easier to do that with the coaches film, but I also see the benefit of actually being in attendance at the game because you can see the interactions on the sideline, especially if your organization is not being a participant in it. So in other words, if you're the general manager of the Houston Texans, which you're not, your staff's not coaching, but to be able to watch how players interact with the coaches on the sideline, how they interact with other players on game day, you know, how are they as far as leadership on game day? I mean, there is value to having personnel guys there on game day, but the bottom line evaluation is really done with the game film, which they distribute to all 32 teams in the National Football League.
As you mentioned, Jaguars.com will have extensive coverage behind the scenes with the coaching staff. Brian Sexton, John Osier, Dave DeCandis, Patrick Kavanaugh will all be in Mobile starting Sunday night into Monday and throughout the week. So go to Jaguars.com and check it out. Go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. We'll talk playoff football when we come back. Final segment of Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. The official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. Final segment of Jaguars Thursday, J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, and playoff football.
All right, let me just start by saying that I was right last week.
About what?
The games.
You said you Indianapolis had no chance.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
You told. Let's go to the
tape. Exactly what you said. You said they had no chance.
Nope. You said that.
No, you did.
I think you both said that.
No.
We both did.
I did too.
You picked the Patriots.
I picked Carolina had no chance.
We both said that. The only difference we had.
You picked Denver. Okay. I picked Indy.
No, you did not.
I certainly did.
I'm taking Tony's word
roll
for
tape.
Because I don't remember this.
Roll
let's
tape.
Let's just fight. Steel cage death
roll
match.
Roll tape.
That wouldn't be very good TV.
So, let's go with this then. Catch or no catch at Lambeau last week?
Not a catch.
Under the rules, it's not, but it's a bad rule.
But it's the rule.
Yeah.
It's the rule. So they got the rule right.
The rule was right.
And you can't go changing rules just because the Cowboys got hosed, right?
Well, I mean, you know.
That's what everybody's crying for now.
Sometimes things have a way of balancing out.
The week before, remember?
You know, right. So, you know, they got a break.
I'm still bothered by the fact that he said he picked Indy. He didn't pick Indy.
Yes, I most certainly did.
I can admit, I picked Dallas and the Ravens. I was wrong.
Yeah.
Boy, the Ravens had
them, though. I
picked
New England. I picked Green Bay. And I did pick Seattle, which everybody picks Seattle. And I took Indy.
All right. Well, how about this week's games? 3:05 start on Fox.
You know what I might have done? I might have picked Denver on this show and then picked Indy with Mike Dempsey.
Yeah, you picked Indy.
Yeah, you picked two different
just
teams.
Just to cover my bases.
You picked Denver here. I know that.
You're 50% right.
But that, no, but I did say, and I remember saying this, though, that I said that that's the one game that concerns me because of the pressure,
right?
You know, and the expectations with that football team.
You saying that,
you know, so and that was kind of to go along with my prediction of picking Indianapolis.
So who are you picking this week? Teams.
Let's start with the NFC Championship game: the Packers with a banged up Aaron Rodgers.
That's the game.
I'm not Seattle.
If there was ever, that's the one game I would say is not a lock. I mean, Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, to ever try to bet against Aaron Rodgers, to watch him the way that he played in the second half of that game against the Dallas Cowboys, and that throw that he made in the end zone where he threaded between two defenders coming from opposite directions, and it reminded me of the throw that Blake Bortles made at Houston where on the first down and 10 there at the end of the ball game where he threw an absolute perfect ball to Cecil Shorts. And he didn't make the catch. But that throw was 10 yards. That throw that Aaron Rodgers made, what was it, like 20-something yards?
Yeah, it was long.
I mean, that's one of the great throws that I've ever seen.
So you got Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Karnak, Baselli, who you got?
I got Seattle and New England.
Okay. Oh, you got New England. We're just skipping right ahead to the AFC Championship game.
Seattle, to me, we both said last week that that was – you know, the lock of the week. You know, Seattle was going to just trounce the Carolina Panthers. They didn't trounce them, you know, as far as, like, score. Mm-hmm.
I thought they were in complete control of the game throughout.
There was never a thought that they were
going to win. No, and you never thought that you know, the Carolina was going to be able to win that game. I honestly expected that to be a much wider margin of victory for the Seattle Seahawks. But I don't think they have the offense for a wide margin of victory at times unless that running game gets going in Carolina. Give them credit. They were able to contain the running game a little bit of the Seattle Seahawks. But the Seattle Seahawks are playing good football. I mean, really good football. And maybe the thing that is most impressive about the way that they play, I mean, they're the defending champions. But do you ever get the sense that they play tight, that they're playing the game, that they're like, oh, my gosh, we can't lose? You get the thought from watching them that this is a team that has nothing to lose, which I think is impressive for them to be able to take that mentality into the playoffs and a swagger, but it's not an overconfident swagger. That's impressive.
Does it go back to head coaching?
Oh, absolutely. Terrible. You got to give Pete a lot of credit to the atmosphere he creates and kind of his message and the way.
But also to the players.
Oh, yeah, but there's the way they structure
buy into it.
And right, they have good players, really good players who buy into it.
When I say players, I mean, first of all, you got to have good players. But you got to have players that have leadership. I mean, Marshawn Lynch, you know, as much as, you know, you want to beat him up, the media likes to beat him up and down because, you know, he doesn't like to do interviews and all that. He is a leader of that football team. Russell Wilson is a leader of that football team. Defensively, take your pick. You know, who's the leader on that defense? Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, he had a great game.
Richard Sherman.
Had a tremendous game. Richard Sherman is a leader. The safety, the free safety.
Earl Thomas,
tremendous leader. I mean, they've got
– linebackers.
I mean, they've got leadership and performance across the board. I mean, that's just – you know, Tony, you always talk about, you know, the better team wins. I don't see a better team in the National Football League than Seattle right now.
The game I want to see is the Seahawks against the Patriots. It'll be a great ball game.
Speaking of the Patriots, they will host the Colts in the AFC Championship game, 6:40 Eastern Time kick on Sunday. You're going
to
be there, Tony.
I'll be there. It's supposed to be in the 40s and rain, which will be miserable.
Sidelines or in the booth?
Sidelines,
oh, nice.
Fortunately.
Better than 30s in the rain.
Could be snow. Last week it was like 8 degrees on the field. I was so cold.
I've got to toughen you up.
No, it was cold. You stand around for 4 hours outside in 8-degree weather or 15-degree weather, whatever it was.
Are you going to be colder this week since you've lost a bunch of weight?
Yes, and I'll be wet and cold. It's a bad combination.
So you got
I fear for my safety.
You got the Patriots, it sounds like. Jeffrey?
And the reason is, I mean, I was at the game. I actually did the game when they played Sunday night in Indianapolis. And the last two playoff games that Indy has lost in New England, I've been there for those as well. And the theme is very simple and it's very similar every time they play. They run the ball right down the throat of the Colts. And then they establish a run and force them to try to put 8 in the box and stop it. They still don't stop it very well, but then everything's open down the field. And I don't see how that changes this week. Unless there's a bunch of turnovers, I don't see how Indy wins that game.
Yeah, and I don't either. I mean, Andrew Luck is an amazing player. I mean, a great player. I mean, for where he's at age-wise, and he's destined to be one of the all-time greats, unfortunately. You know, I mean, that's – you know,
in the division.
In the division.
Yep.
But you look at them overall as a team, they've got some weaknesses on defense, which, you know – but you know what? That's the game that, you know, I think it's going to be closer than people think. You know, because Indianapolis defense did a really good job the last two games. Really good job. And personnel-wise, they're not a great personnel team. They've got a great quarterback, and they've got some really good skill position players. But they don't have a great personnel on the defensive side of the ball.
Another team that's very well coached, Chuck Pagano and his staff does a great job getting them ready. They played great defense for 2 weeks, but they played against a Cincinnati team without A.J. Green and Andy Dalton, who is Andy Dalton. And last week they played against Peyton Manning, who was hurt and was not very effective. I don't think either of those – I don't think that's going to be the fact with Tom Brady.
All right, Jeff, you're on vacation next week.
I am.
We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Tony, where are you?
I'll be calling. I'm going to spend the week at the Senior Bowl in Mobile.
All right. We'll have you on the phone next week.
Yes, sir.
For Jaguars Thursday. 6 o'clock start next week and for the rest of the offseason. For everyone involved, this is JP Shadrick. Thank you for listening. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.